Welcome back to the Deep End of Public Education. My name is Kristen Grubbs, and I'm grateful you've joined me for today's episode, as I'll be sharing some difficult truths about what's going on in school libraries, giving examples from my very own district in a suburb of Kansas City, Missouri. Let us not linger at the edge, but jump on in to the deep end of public education. In today's episode, I'm diving straight into the controversial issue of pornography in our public schools. Unfortunately, this issue has been painted as an effort to censor minorities or marginalized people groups. That couldn't be farther from the truth. The reality of this issue is that materials are being allowed into our schools despite them lacking any educational value. I've been working hard at going through book titles and reviews that others have claimed are inappropriate for school-aged children. I've searched our school district's online library catalogs and made a list that I continue to add to. It currently sits at nearly 60 books. You might be wondering what I found in these books that would make them inappropriate. To explain this, I must first share with you what Missouri law has to say about furnishing pornography to minors. Revised Missouri Statute 573.04 reads, "A person commits the offense of furnishing pornographic material to minors if, knowing of its content and character, he or she, 1, furnishes any material pornographic for minors, knowing that the person to whom it is furnished is a minor or acting in reckless disregard of the likelihood that such person is a minor, or 2, produces, presents, directs, or participates in any performance pornographic for minors that is furnished to a minor, knowing that any person viewing such performance is a minor or acting in reckless disregard of the likelihood that a minor is viewing the performance, or 3, furnishes, produces, presents, directs, participates in any performance or otherwise makes available material that is pornographic for minors via computer, electronic transfer, internet, or computer network if the person has made the matter available to a specific individual known by the defendant to be a minor." To understand this law further, we must refer back to some definitions within the law. First, we need to know what it means by pornographic for minors. Revised Missouri Statute 573.01 defines this as any material or performance if the following apply. A, the average person applying contemporary community standards would find that the material or performance, taken as a whole, has a tendency to cater or appeal to a prurient interest of minors. And B, the material or performance depicts or describes nudity, sexual conduct, the condition of the human genitals when in a state of sexual stimulation or arousal, or sadomasochistic abuse in a way which is patently offensive to the average person applying contemporary adult community standards with respect to what is suitable for minors. And C, the material or performance taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. To be clear for those of you who were like me when I first read this law, Black Law's Dictionary defines the word prurient as concerning or having an excessive interest in sexual matters, nudity, lascivious conduct. Furthermore, the Law Dictionary defines lascivious as tending to excite lust, lewd, indecent, obscene, relating to sexual impurity, tending to deprave the morals in respect to sexual relations. Okay, so the first part of this law, with these definitions inserted, reads, "The average person applying contemporary community standards would find that the material or performance, taken as a whole, has a tendency to cater or appeal to an excessive interest in sexual matters, nudity, lustful, lewd, indecent, obscene, sexually impure, or depraved sexual relations of minors." There's a more descriptive section of this law that I'll spare you, as it is extensive and quite specific about what visual acts are included as pornographic. So Missouri law says it's illegal to furnish or make available these types of sexual materials to anyone under the age of 18. There's one more piece of this law which seems to be misunderstood. That is the word material. I recently listened to a podcast episode by Ed Council about porn in schools. Ed Council is a team of 12 lawyers whose primary goal is to provide support and counsel to public school districts across the state of Missouri. In episode 46, they explain how schools are to approach the issue of explicit sexual materials in public schools. Unfortunately, the leading host of the show misinterpreted the law, saying, quote, "Explicit sexual material, it does not really include text. It includes any pictorial, three-dimensional, or visual depiction that would include any photography, film, video, picture, or computer-generated image showing certain things," end quote. I share this quote with you to expose one of many issues with this battle at hand. Let's set aside what the law team expressed in a counseling format and see what Missouri law really says. Revised Missouri Statute 573.01 defines material as anything printed or written, or any picture, drawing, photograph, motion picture film, videotape or videotape production, or pictorial representation, or any recording of transcription, or any mechanical, chemical, or electronic reproduction, or stored computer data, undeveloped photographs, molds, printing plates, stored computer data, and representational objects. Did you catch the first four words there? It says, anything printed or written. Wow. So the message set forth by Ed Council to Missouri Public Schools is that the written word is not included in this law restricting pornography from being made available to minors. Yet the law itself says it is included. This is not some backwards attorney spouting off his own ideas of law. This is the message set forth by a team of a dozen lawyers who advise public school districts all over the state of Missouri. They're either neglecting the details of the law, thus incompetent, or they're willfully choosing to misdirect school districts in legal matters. Either way, they're not part of the solution. Now that we know what is considered wrong in the eyes of the law, let's apply this to materials found in our schools. There's a book currently available in two of my district's three high schools called Lucky by Alice Sibold. In the first dozen pages, a violent rape of a teenage girl takes place. Throughout the rest of the book, the victim is dealing with the fallout of that one event. You can find details about this book in the book review section on the website booklooks.org. That's booklooks.org. This website assigns a rating of 0 to 5 book reviews submitted. This particular book is rated a 5, the most concerning of all. On BookLooks, this book by Alice Sibold has a content warning saying, "You are about to access material that may contain content of an adult nature. These files may include pictures and materials that some viewers may find offensive. If you are under the age of 18, or if such material offends you, or if it is illegal for you to view these materials, please exit now." Why is this book being made available to minors in my school district? There's a different book for which I recognize the title, and having happened upon its story and film version years ago, I was appalled to see it's currently available to minors in my school district. It was written by the same author as the book I just described. The book is called The Lovely Bones. My husband and I both remember being upset by that movie as it had a horrific ending. Sadly, what was the ending in the film is actually in the first 16 pages of the book. The main character is a 14-year-old girl who is lured into an underground bunker by a pedophile who ends up raping and killing her. Her narration of the story is from the afterlife. Again, what is the purpose of this plot? This violent and graphically sexual scene being made available to children in our school libraries. As if that's not bad enough, here's a more disturbing truth. This book is not just available in all three of our high schools, but it's also available at one of our middle schools. I'll note here that this school year is the first year that sixth graders are included in our middle schools. This means that kids as young as 11 could be reading this horrific account of a rape and murder of a young girl. Using legal terminology for emphasis, how could any average person applying contemporary community standards not find that material or performance taken as a whole to have a tendency to cater or appeal to a prurient interest of minors? The material clearly describes nudity and sexual conduct, and the material taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. Neither of these books, and many others, have no educational value in the hands of minors. In fact, they not only aren't adding educational value in public schools, they're actually causing more damage than anything. When sexual situations and encounters are displayed before children in such a nonchalant manner, especially including behaviors like promiscuity, deviance, rape, incest, pedophilia, bestiality, and sadomasochism, in time, it has a way of normalizing these behaviors, making them less shocking and more acceptable as children develop into adulthood. There's an endless supply of studies about this very real occurrence. You can find countless studies about the effects of pornography on the brain on a website very simply called Your Brain on Porn. I share a couple of interesting studies I found through this website in my book called Deep End of Public Education. It is fascinating and disheartening all at once, but the fact that pornography is detrimental to healthy human behavior is true. Science continues to prove it over and over. Let's float here for a moment in the deep end of public education as we consider what I've just shared about Missouri law. How can the law be applied to books like Lucky and The Lovely Bones? There is so much more detail in this law than I have time for in this short podcast, but I'll summarize it like this. These books contain language that is graphically sexual. If the written words were to play out on a movie screen, they would be inappropriate for children to view. The film version of The Lovely Bones was actually rated PG-13, but it didn't show the scene quite like the book described it. The rape scene was more implied than explicitly shown. In these books, more specifically Lucky, details of the rape were quite vivid and wildly unacceptable for children. What's the next step now that the content of these two books have been concluded to be pornographic for minors? Well, this is when I, as a concerned citizen with my school district, can turn to district policy and procedure for filing a complaint about educational materials within the district. In my district, we have a policy that says citizens within the district can submit a complaint for a material to be reviewed. Once submitted, the superintendent of the district, or a designee, is responsible for assigning a committee of people, usually about 6 to 10 people, made up of parents, staff, teachers, even students at times, to review the material and report a recommendation back to the superintendent for the board to decide whether to accept. If the Board of Education accepts the recommendation, either retain the book, retain it with restrictions, or remove it altogether, that decision is final, unless a citizen decides to appeal the decision to retain the book. If this were to happen, then the school board members themselves are required to read the book, review it, and decide whether to continue with the committee's recommendation or choose a different path forward. If you'd like more details on this policy or procedure in my district, or if you'd like to see what the complaint form looks like, you can find these resources on my Deep End of Public Education Facebook page. On that same post, you'll find a link to the list of books I've compiled actively in my school district's libraries right now. Again, you can find those books and many more on booklooks.org. I have not searched for every book from BookLooks yet to see if they're in my district. I've searched many, but there are so many more. I've been working hard to compile complaints over books that violate Missouri law by being in our schools. If you'd like to assist in this effort and are in my school district, follow those links on my Facebook page and submit your own complaints, especially if you've got your own experience with inappropriate materials your kids have brought home from school. If you're not in my district and you're wanting to know if your school district has materials like this being made available to minors, go check out booklooks.org. go read about their rating system and peruse their reviews. I strongly suggest that you pray for protection throughout the process, as some of these books contain language that I, as a woman married for nearly 22 years, would have otherwise never allowed myself to read had it not been for my desire to stand up and protect our children. Be careful to not allow yourself to be pulled into the temptation of sin through sexual desire. If you decide to do a deep dive into the deep end of public education and you find materials that are not already on booklooks.org, please submit a review to them so they can add it to their collection. Also, I would love if you could send me what you find. You can email me at mark4verse22@protonmail.com. That's M-A-R-K, the number 4, V-E-R-S-E, 22@protonmail.com. Or message me through my Facebook page, Deep Into Public Education. There's so much more to say on this topic. I foresee another episode on this issue in my future. It's difficult to properly address this issue in such a short amount of time. Before we end our swim in the deep end, I'd like to share with you some encouragement. This world is a big, confusing place. Our children are growing up in a world quite different than anything we grew up in. It is our responsibility as their parents to protect them from the dangers of this world. Today, I introduced my 15-year-old daughter to a book I love called The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. She was a survivor of the Holocaust, having experienced horrifying events that would leave any person hopeless. But she came out of it stronger and more determined to speak truth and share hope. In the second chapter, Corrie tells a story from her childhood when she was riding the train with her father, a time she liked to use for conversation. Corrie recollects, "Oftentimes, I would use the trip home to bring up things that were troubling me, since anything I asked at home was promptly answered by the aunts. Once, I must have been 10 or 11, I asked Father about a poem we had read at school the winter before. One line had described a young man whose face was not shadowed by sex sin. I had been far too shy to ask the teacher what it meant, and Mama had blushed scarlet when I consulted her. In those days, just after the turn of the century, sex was never discussed, even at home. So the line had stuck in my head. Sex, I was pretty sure, meant whether you were a boy or a girl. And sin made Tanti Johns, her aunt, very angry. But what the two together meant, I could not imagine. And so, seated next to Father in the train compartment, I suddenly asked, 'Father, what is sex sin?' He turned to look at me, as he always did when answering a question, but to my surprise, he said nothing. At last, he stood up, lifted his traveling case from the rack over our heads, and set it on the floor. 'Will you carry it off the train, Corrie?' he said. I stood up and tugged at it. It was crammed with the watches and spare parts he had purchased that morning. 'It's too heavy,' I said. 'Yes,' he said, 'and it would be a pretty poor father who would ask his little girl to carry such a load. It's the same way, Corrie, with knowledge. Some knowledge is too heavy for children. When you are older and stronger, you can bear it. For now, you must trust me to carry it for you.' And I was satisfied, more than satisfied, wonderfully at peace. There were answers to this and all my hard questions. For now, I was content to leave them in my father's keeping." How profound was Corrie's father's message? There are certain things in this world that are too much of a burden on our children. There are indeed truths in this world that our children are not meant to be weighed down with. Years ago, when my oldest child and I had the sex talk, I also shared with her a similar analogy as Corrie's father. When I shared with her how she now has knowledge about things that younger people just can't understand, I posed an analogy. Teaching young children about sex is like expecting babies to read and write. How can I expect a baby to read a book when they don't even know how to speak? How can I expect a toddler to read when they don't know their letters? I cannot ask a kindergartner to grasp Shakespearean themes when they're still learning syllables and phonics. How can they understand the whole picture if they don't even know what the parts are or how they work? The same goes for sex. How can children fully grasp the weight of the act and behavior of sex, the mental, emotional, and spiritual connection, if they don't even understand the parts and the purpose yet? I love how Corey said it when she said, "There were answers to this and all my hard questions. For now, I was content to leave them in my Father's keeping." My Christian faith teaches me the same thing. If we are to protect our children from the dangers in this world that weigh them down and alter their path into adulthood, then we've got to not just be willing to stand up, but actively standing up and speaking truth in this world full of lies. We need our libraries to be guarded by a standard that doesn't allow pornographic materials into our kids' hands. We need our libraries to be cleansed of materials that have no academic benefit to our district's children. We need our school districts to set an example of good leadership. That's not happening when they're actively choosing to break the law and furnish pornography for minors. Will you join with me in this effort to hold our school districts accountable and to hold them responsible for these immoral and unethical choices? I sure hope you do, because it's going to take all of us uniting with the common goal of protecting our babies to get our school system back into shape and back on track, educating our children. Thank you for listening today as we swam through one of the murkier parts of the deep end of public education. The fact that you're listening is encouraging. That's the first step, becoming aware. Now that you're aware of what the law is and what type of materials are in our schools, I hope you'll be bold and be brave and take your own jump into the deep end of public education. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you know when new episodes post. Please be sure to share this episode with everyone you know who has kids in the public education. Shoot me a message on my Facebook page or email me at mark4verse22@protownmail.com. If you have questions or if you would like to share your experiences in public education with me. If you'd like to learn more about what's going on in the deep end, you can find my book, Deep End of Public Education, on Amazon. When you search for it, you'll have to type the title, then narrow down your results to all books. I had a conversation with Amazon this week about this, and they said, because I labeled my book as for 18 and older, my book title will not appear at the top of a basic search. Interestingly enough, I tagged my book as for adults because I quote two paragraphs from a pornographic book that is still currently in my school district and marketed as for readers 13 and up. I know it's a ridiculous hoop to swim through, but so be it. Thank you again for swimming with me today in the deep end of public education. God bless.